Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Well, yes, indeed. That's exactly where it's from. Ladies and gentlemen, from Southern California, where it was cold this week. And I know, saying cold in the context of Southern California is just a risible premise at best when you have people in Chicago who are saying 16 for a high, and they're not talking about that's not drug code. That's temperature. That's temperature and no time and no traffic. So anyway, but it was cold here for Southern California. And as if to underline the fact, the heating went out in our house. Thank you, Southern California Edison. But no, it something exploded blocks away, and so no heating. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is not, I'm not complaining, just observing that when you say Southern California at this time of year, people think, oh, no. But no, because this is going to be the second of the Year in Rebuke programs that look back with some affection at what's been going on this past year. But before we get to that, some up-to-the-minute developments, or non-developments, as the case may be. Like this, news of, fuck! President Obama's brain trust on Afghanistan. Now, that's rather sarcastic usage, because this is from the Washington Times, owned by Reverend Moon. But anyway, here's the report. Officials from the Obama administration testified before the House Foreign Affairs Committee on the issue of Afghanistan and the transition to possibly fewer, possibly no U.S. troops post-2014. The witnesses were the State Department's special representative to Afghanistan and Pakistan, AFAC, Donald Sampler, assistant to the administrator for the Agency for International Development, and the deputy assistant secretary of defense for AFPAC. Dana Rohrabacher, a congressman, the surfing congressman, formerly surfing, I guess, congressman from California, asked what he thought was a simple question. He's a Republican. How much are we spending annually in Afghanistan? How much is the cost to the American taxpayer? Dobbins from State Department gestured to the other witnesses for the answer. They had no reply. Anybody know, Rohrabacher asked. Nobody knows the total budget, what we're spending in Afghanistan. It's a hearing in Afghanistan. Can I have an estimate? I'm sorry, Congressman, said the representative from the State Department. Rohrabacher called the lack of an answer, quote, disheartening. He then followed up with, how many killed and wounded have we suffered in the last 12 months? None of the three had an answer. The representative from the Pentagon said he would get back to him. Quote, we're supposed to believe you fellows have a plan that's going to end up in a positive way in Afghanistan. Holy cow, said the congressman. That's going to go down in the annals of history, in congressional rhetoric. Holy cow, unquote. Then a Virginia Democrat, they still have those, don't they? He piped up, Representative Gerald Connolly. He said he was stunned. I say to the panel, Mr. Rohrabacher is right. How you can come to a congressional oversight hearing on this subject with your titles and not know how much we're spending every year and not know how many casualties we incur this last year, I will say to the chairman of this committee, it is actually a stunning, stunning development. That's two stunnings from a Virginia Democrat. So you know he almost must mean it. So as of now, ladies and gentlemen, at least in terms of the congressional hearing this week, we have no idea how much we're spending in Afghanistan, and we have no idea the cost in U.S. lives. And notice they didn't even bother to ask about the lives of others, to quote a recent movie. Good news from AFPAC all around. Well, not knowing is... Hello, welcome to the show.
The elves were making toys for the good Gentile girls and the good Gentile boys. When the boss busted in, nearly scared him half to death. Had a rifle in his hands and cheap whiskey on his breath. From his beard to his boots, he was covered with ammo. Like a big, fat, drunk, disgruntled, yuletide Rambo. And he smiled as he said,
with a twinkle in his eye. Merry Christmas to all, now you're all gonna die.
The night Santa went crazy, the night Saint Nick went insane. Realized he'd been getting the wrong deal. Something finally must have stopped in his brain.
Well, the workshop is gone now, he decided to bomb it. Everywhere you'll find pieces of Cupid and Comet. And he tied up his helpers, and he held the elves hostage. And he ground up poor Rudolph into reindeer sausage.
He got Dancer and Prancer with an old German Luger. And he slashed up Dasher just like Freddy Krueger. And he picked up a flamethrower and a barbecue Blitzen. And he took a big bite and said it tastes just like chicken.
Santa Claus is dead. Some guy from the SWAT team blew a hole through his head. Yes, little friend, now that's his brains on the floor. I guess they won't have the fat guy to kick around anymore.
But now there's no more presents for the children's enjoyment. And the elves gotta stand in line to file for unemployment. And they say Mrs. Claus, she's on the phone every night with a lawyer negotiating the
Northridge and Los Angeles, where you can actually see the mountains, so you know something's wrong. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show, and I want to, first of all, and the nerve of a guy saying, first of all, 10 minutes, almost 10 minutes into a show, would be breathtaking if it weren't me. I want to, first of all, thank all of the people last night, last Sunday night, last Saturday night, at all of the holiday sing-alongs in respectively Los Angeles last night, Philadelphia last Sunday night, and New York. Brooklyn, a week ago last Saturday night. The great array of talent that has shown up so far to help us raise money for the New Orleans Musicians Clinic and the International Red Cross Philippine Typhoon Relief effort, and actually also to thank all the wonderful people who've shown up to be at the thing, to pay the money and to come to the thing. Looking forward, as you must. A couple more of these this Thursday night at Space in Evanston, Illinois, in Chicagoland, with a wonderful lineup again. And then capping it off next Saturday and Sunday at the Ogden Museum in New Orleans, Louisiana, with the usual gang and some surprises. And again, it's a benefit, so if you can come, please do. And now, news of bad banks. Yeah, there seem to be more and more of them every day. And here are the latest. Former and current directors of the Lloyds Banking Group in England could face having their bonuses clawed back after the bailout bank was hit with a record $40 million fine for putting their staff under pressure, under intense pressure, to sell stuff customers didn't want or else face demotion and pay cuts. Bank, by the way, is 33% owned by the British taxpayer. Now they have to compensate up to 700,000 customers, pay about $150 million to them. The customers bought $3 billion worth of stocks and shares and illness or insurance, income insurance between January 2010 and March 2012. In a bonus-induced selling frenzy by the staff, the scale of the fine, it's a record for the British regulator, which means, but it's still a record. And the potential bill for redress could result in bonuses for past and current directors being clawed back, as they say in the banking industry, to demonstrate the pain involved in giving back their bonuses. A sales advisor sold financial protection products to himself, his wife, and a colleague in an attempt to avoid being demoted. A grand-in-your-hand scheme for advisors at one of the banks made payments of $1,500 for hitting sales targets. And a champagne bonus was awarded to Lloyd's staff, worth 35% of their monthly salary for meeting the targets. But there's more. The Office of the Special Inspector General for the Troubled Asset Relief Program, SIGTARP, announced that the holding company of Cincinnati-based Fifth Third Bank, I've always thought of this as the funniest bank, Fifth Third, not so funny now, its holding company and its former chief financial officer, Daniel Poston, were charged by the Securities and Exchange Commission with improper accounting of commercial real estate loans, right in the middle of the financial crisis. That couldn't have helped. Fifth Third has agreed to pay $6.5 million to settle the charges, and Daniel Poston has agreed to pay, oh my God, they actually penalized an executive, a $100,000 penalty, and is suspended from practicing as an accountant on behalf of any publicly traded company. Wow, that's a slap on both wrists. According to the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, Fifth Third experienced a substantial increase in non-performing assets, as the junk is called, and they decided to sell large pools of those troubled loans, and they lied about how they were shown on their books. That's Fifth Third Bank, ladies and gentlemen, not Fourth Third. Don't be confused. Don't take this out on Fourth Third. Last December, the California Supreme Court declined to hear an appeal by a couple who had accused Wells Fargo of predatory lending. One justice on the court who owned stock in the bank recused himself from the case, but Justice Catherine Werdegar, well, she owned as much as $1 million of Wells Fargo stock, according to publicintegrity.org. She participated in the decision, and she shouldn't have. The Center for Public Integrity learned of her financial stake thanks to California's relatively strong financial reporting requirements for judges and justices. California's law, however, is an exception, so don't feel protected by anything like that. After reviewing 3 years of personal financial disclosure, the center found judges who authored opinions favoring companies in which they own stock. Imagine that. Quelle surprise. And one more bad bank. Back to England for this one. But, you know, well, J.P. Morgan is paying fines, Bank of America is paying. I'd like to see a total of how many billions the banks are paying in fines right about now. That would make me feel better about putting my money in there. The Serious Fraud Office in England, this is because the Comical Fraud Office is busy, the Serious Fraud Office is considering a criminal investigation into the allegations that the Royal Bank of Scotland systematically defrauded companies by forcing them out of business. In recent weeks, the Serious Fraud Office has conducted interviews about this, assessing whether there's any criminal activity or whether the bank was engaging in lawful but bad business practice. It's a fairly complicated scheme in which the bank would assess fees and other things against perfectly solvent businesses, forcing them into bankruptcy and then pouncing in to grab their assets at a few cents on the dollar. That is a bad bank, ladies and gentlemen. I'll say it right here, right now. And right here, right now, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save to save to meter. Save, save to save to meter.
Our friend Addie is here, the Atom. Addie the Atom.
It's very dry in here.
It is. Are you getting a static charge?
I get no charges.
Not even on your proton?
Leave my proton out of this.
All right, then. Australian Broadcasting Commission, or corporation, recently held an exclusive interview with Dale Klein, the former chairman of the NRC in our country, now chairman of the Fukushima Monitoring Committee, in which he admitted that many more accidents are bound to happen at the stricken nuclear site before the cleanup is finished, and that the contaminated water collected will eventually have to be dumped on the sea, into the sea. I think the best word to use with Fuk, he said, is challenging. Water exposed to radiation from Fuk will reach the U.S. at safe levels, the chairwoman of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory. What are you looking at?
I'm reassured.
The chairman of the NRC said as the first isotopes linked to the plant near the West Coast came close, the highest, quote, the highest amount of radiation that will reach the U.S. is two orders of magnitude less than the drinking water standard, said Allison McFarlane. So if you could drink the salt water, which you won't be able to do, it's still fairly low.
Don't drink the salt water.
Okay, thanks. Good advice from an Atom. Dateline Naha, Japan. Naha. Storage tanks at Fuk, like the one that spilled almost 80,000 gallons of radioactive water this year, were built in part by workers illegally hired in one of the poorest corners of Japan, say labor regulators and some of those involved in the work. Even if we didn't agree with how things were done, we had to keep quiet and work fast, said one of them.
That's always a good idea.
I guess. Nuclear regulatory...
You want my teeth?
You have no teeth. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission has extended the expiration date of the construction permit for unfinished Unit 2 at Watts Bar Nuclear Plant near Spring City, Tennessee. It has had a long and storied history. Ground was broken on Unit 2.
I think... Yes, you did.
We already covered that. Electricité de France, EDF, is being asked to review its cooling facilities. The world's biggest atomic operator must resolve concerns of regulators in order to win permission to extend the lives of its reactors. All 58 of them, there's a water tank that stores spent fuel rods, keeping them cool. The country's atomic watchdog is concerned they aren't safe enough.
Not safe enough is safe enough.
Significant safety improvements have to be made, said Thomas Oudret, director of reactors, making the regulators' strongest comments on the issue so far.
That is scary.
That is. There's no way of managing an accident in a spent fuel pool, he says. We want the possibility of this happening to be practically eliminated.
Not entirely, though.
Not entirely. Practically. Fire engines were used in a desperate and ultimately futile attempt to pump water to cool overheating reactors during the early phase of the Fuk disaster, TEPCO now says. According to a report this week, water was pumped in sufficient quantity to avert core meltdowns in the reactors, but much of it strayed into irrelevant pipes and ended up, and here's reassuring news, elsewhere.
So why don't they just have relevant pipes?
See? The Atom is always thinking. In its report, TEPCO singled out 52 issues that have been left unanswered in its June of last year investigation on the disaster. The utility said it will find answers to those questions within 2 years.
If you don't know the answers, how do you know how long it will take to find out?
Oh, and the Atom asks a good question. In January, Energy Solutions will begin the most crucial part of its 10-year dismantling of the shuttered Zion nuclear power plant in Utah, and that involves safely removing the radioactive fuel rods. You're getting the idea, ladies and gentlemen, that the fuel rods are sort of the vulnerable soft spot of this whole system. That's what's being dismantled with great care as the most challenging part of the Fuk project. And now here we go, removing the fuel rods at Zion in Utah. The project is the largest in the history of the U.S. nuclear power industry, the first in which a plant's owner has turned over its license to a third party for the purpose of dismantling it. The plant, not the license.
I was going to ask.
Energy Solutions is staking its future on the project. How it handles the most expensive and risky phase of the project will be crucial to it winning other such work going forward. Zion is owned by Chicago-based Exelon Corporation.
Don't do that again.
I won't. They generated electricity on the shores of... Oh, no, Zion was on the shores of Lake Michigan. Energy Solutions is in Utah. But Zion is usually the name of stuff in Utah. I'm confused.
You're confused.
I'm confused. By the time the project is complete, it will have taken nearly as long to destroy it as the length of time in which the plant actually produced electricity on the shores of Lake Michigan. Four 10-man teams will work around the clock for a year to remove 1,500 tons of nuclear waste from the pools where some of it has sat for 40 years.
That's good sitting.
Zion's nuclear waste, which will remain on site indefinitely, will be packed into 61 steel canisters, then sealed in concrete garage-size casks. The casks, each weighing 150 tons, will sit atop a concrete pad. They're designed to withstand high winds, missiles, flooding, fire, and earthquakes.
Rain?
Doesn't mention rain. The plant itself is being scrapped and hauled off in rail cars to Utah by Energy Solutions. This is the first decommissioning project to take place in a deregulated electricity market, according to the NRC. As a result, state regulators will not have authority to question how the dismantling is performed.
Who needs regulators?
Japan is planning to spend $970 million to create a special space to store the soil contaminated with radioactive water from Fuk, according to a report issued this week.
Storing hot water?
Storing hot water. Tens of thousands of tons of soil are waiting to be stored, and the Japanese authorities have set aside money to buy 3 to 5 square kilometers of land. They plan to use land in three towns that are located close to Fuk and that are heavily contaminated.
Well, you're not going to build a CVS there.
No, you're not. The mayors of the towns, Futaba, Okuma, and Naraha, are worried the site could easily transform from a temporary to a permanent one. No official from the Environment Ministry would comment. Around 133,000 tons of contaminated soil have been collected from the area around the plant so far.
Hot dirt, anybody?
Hot dirt. Fixing the radioactive water leaks at Fuk, together with ocean contamination, could take more than 5 years, says a report by a Japanese advisory body. The repairing process includes building stronger storage tanks at the site, covering areas with impermeable coating to stop groundwater contamination.
Paving Japan.
Mm-hmm. And building underground walls to block subsurface inflow. The efforts might end only, in March 2019. Counting the cost, children from Fuk Prefecture continue to show high obesity rates due to the impact of the nuclear plant calamity that continues to restrict their outdoor activities.
Hot dirt and fat kids.
That's correct. The proportion of obese children in Ofuk was the highest of all the prefectures in 6 out of 13 grades from kindergarten to high school in this fiscal year. This outcome is closely linked to restrictions on children's outdoor activities and changes in their lifestyles after they had to evacuate or transfer to other schools due to the meltdown. The proportion of children from Fuk Prefecture who were at least 20% heavier than the standard was above the national average for all 13 grades.
Me personally, I'd like to see more fat Japanese people.
Okay. It's a personal opinion of a non-person. Japan is incapable of safely decommissioning the devastated Fuk plant alone and must stitch together an international team for the massive undertaking, according to experts who've spoken to the Associated Press. But Japan has made only halting progress in that direction. Unlike the U.S., Japan has never before decommissioned a full-fledged reactor. Now it must do so after the meltdown. The cloud over Japan's capacity to get the decades-long job done has further undermined the image of the nuclear industry with the public. For the U.S. nuclear industry, such a cleanup and decommissioning would be a great challenge, says Akira Tokahiro.
Let us know.
He's a professor at the University of Idaho of Mechanical and Nuclear Engineering, who's among those calling for a larger international role at Fukushima.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
All right, then. Clean, cheap, safe to everything to meter. Our friend the Atom. Now, ladies and gentlemen, early in the year that we're looking back on, there was a concern, a lot of yakking in Washington about the almost World Wrestling Federation style antics of the Republicans and the Democrats in squaring off against each other in great operatic dramatic tones, and concern that, you know, stuff would never get done again in our nation's capital. And so in the midst of all of this talk, there were reports that President Obama was changing his previous policy of being fairly unavailable to members of Congress and was engaging in a so-called charm offensive. And one of the first recipients of that charm offensive was his opponent in the 2008 election, now senior Republican Senator John McCain. We'll look back on what happened in
2013, the year in rebuke.
Well, John, I'm glad you could make time in your busy schedule to accept my invitation.
Mr. President, you know that whatever our differences, any time that the Commander-in-Chief calls me, and it's not a Sunday morning when I have some network TV appearances scheduled, I'm at the Commander-in-Chief's disposal.
Well, I appreciate that, John. It's important to me, and it's important to the country.
Well, I just know that if I were Commander-in-Chief, I'd certainly want my invitations accepted. We have our differences.
One being, of course, that I am the Commander-in-Chief.
Obviously.
Obviously.
But if preparing a meal with you can help the country heal some of this rancorous partisanship, heck, Mr. President, I'll swallow more than my pride.
Well, and, you know, not just preparing a meal, John.
Boy, I haven't done this since Cindy's hair moved.
I just think that if you will, these budget negotiations have the country skating on thin ice.
I mean, you got me out here just to live out a metaphor?
It's good exercise, too.
Uh-huh.
Especially if you stop holding onto the railing.
Well, to fight metaphor with metaphor, sir, I'm the kind of Republican who still holds on to the railing of common sense. I think that may be why you think we can do some business.
John, we both want what's best for the country.
Yes.
But you've got some wild men and women on your side of the aisle. We just sent our wildest guy, Dennis Kucinich, to be a crash test dummy on Fox News.
Let me ask you a question, sir.
Uh-huh.
When you want to stop, you just hold on to the railing harder?
Yeah, I had the pool reinstalled, replaced the transparency center. They weren't using it.
You know, my shoulders never really recovered from the torture.
Well, but we're looking forward, John, not backward. That's one thing we can agree on, right? Right?
Of course, your daughters are younger than my Megan. Mm. It makes a big difference. You can still control them.
Well, for maybe a minute more.
Well, you know, in a way, that's a lot like my house brethren.
Ooh. Yeah, except you don't have to pay their tuition to Sidwell Friends.
Yes, but you don't have to go to retreats with your daughters at White Sulphur Springs.
Oh. You seem tense there.
Yeah, it's where they hung you by the arms.
Oh, we don't look backward. We look forward.
So, look, we're really not that far apart.
Yeah.
You guys want to privatize Social Security? We want to gut it gently. There's got to be some meeting ground somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, there is. My guys will be happy to make that deal, just as long as it doesn't look like they're doing business with you. That's poison in their primaries. Ooh.
Want some more hot chocolate?
Sure. Tastes a little funny.
It's a carob from Michelle's garden.
I'm fine.
So, look. You know, if I keep denouncing your guys and your guys keep denouncing me, it'll look like
we're still denouncing each other.
And that gives everybody cover to make the deal.
Well, I have to think about it. Talk to some of the guys and the gals.
Well, we can do this again, right?
You mean this little tete-a-tete?
Uh-huh. Maybe something a little less strenuous so that looking forward doesn't bother you so much.
Mr. President, whenever you call, as long as it's not on a Sunday morning, I'll be happy to come see you.
Oh, thanks.
I'm sure, had things been a little bit different, you would have done the same thing for me.
Of course I would. But we're looking forward.
Right.
And now, and the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
The Today Show has apologized for a joke aired on Wednesday morning's broadcast that riffed on the news that the sign language interpreter at Nelson Mandela's funeral allegedly used fake signs during world leaders' remarks. During a segment detailing the Mandela news, an inset image of a man mimicking the motions of sign language appeared on screen for several seconds on the Today program. No, the Today Show. Sorry. It's not a program. It's a show. The hosts appear to immediately recognize the joke was in poor taste. No, guys, let's not do that, said host Natalie Morales. No, no, wrong, added Al Roker, who covered his face with his hands. We aired a joke in our 9 o'clock hour that was offensive. We apologize to our viewers, the show later wrote on its official Twitter account. Dateline San Francisco technology entrepreneur Greg Gottman has inflamed already tense relations between San Francisco and its growing population of upwardly mobile techies with a full-throttle critique of the city's homeless population. In a Facebook post, or a Facebook post, Gottman said San Francisco had been overrun by, quote, crazy homeless drug dealers and trash. There's nothing positive from having them so close to us, he said. He's the chief executive of Angel Hack. He deleted the post and on Wednesday he apologized for it, but not before being engulfed by controversy for his comments and fanning the flames of the class war in San Francisco. Last night I made inappropriate comments about San Francisco and its less fortunate citizens on Market Street, he wrote. I'm really sorry for my comments. I trivialized the plight of those struggling to get by, and I shouldn't have. I hope this thread can help start an open discussion on what changes we can make to fix these serious problems. Again, I am deeply sorry. Angel Hack runs hackathons. Yes, you're glad you asked. The Duke of Medina Sidonia, Alonso Gonzalez de Gregorio y Alvarez de Toledo, has formally apologized to the president of the Jewish community of Gibraltar for atrocities committed during the expulsion of the Jewish community from Spain in the 15th century and the subsequent expulsion of Jews from Gibraltar. Never too late, department. The second Duke of Medina Sidonia had expelled Jews from Gibraltar in 1476 after they'd escaped there from Spain. Today I apologize before the Jewish community in Gibraltar, who are moral and genetic heirs of the converted Andalusians who in 1474 fled the cruel, uncontrollable genocide in Andalusia and resorted to take refuge in the city, the Duke read from a written statement. The Duke couldn't ad-lib that. Dateline Athens, Ohio, officials in a southeastern Ohio county have apologized for a scenario they used for an emergency responder drill that offended some people. Athens County Emergency Management Agency issued an apology for using a scenario involving a fake anti-fracking group. Activists protesting hydraulic fracking have been vocal in and around Athens. That is, of course, the Athens of Ohio, home to Ohio University. The apology was taken after Roxanne Groff, a member of the Athens County Fraction Action Network, requested the apology from county commissioners. The statement said the scenario caused distress to people who have spent countless hours striving to protect the environment and our citizens, unquote. Damian Lewis has told of his huge embarrassment at offending Sir Ian McKellen after Lewis said he did not want to become a, quote, fruity actor, unquote, known for playing wizards. The star of Homeland released a statement proclaiming himself an enormous fan of McKellen and assuring him that his comments were little more than a generic analogy. I'm hugely embarrassed that comments of mine have been linked in a negative way to Sir Ian, the statement read. I've always been and continue to be an enormous fan and admirer of Sir Ian's. He's one of the greats and one of the reasons I became an actor. My comments in The Guardian was a soundbite I've been giving since 1999. It was a generic analogy that was never intended to demean or describe anyone else's career. The actor has also contacted McKellen directly to offer his sincerest apologies. Lewis did not mention any names during the interview, but voiced his intention never to become, quote, one of these slightly over-the-top fruity actors who would have an illustrious career on stage but wouldn't start getting any kind of film work until later in life. McKellen, one of Britain's leading actors, said the younger star needn't worry about his career, adding he's very happy. To rebut his comment, I wouldn't like to have been one of those actors who hit stardom quite early on and expected it to continue and was stuck doing scripts that I didn't particularly like just to keep the income up, unquote, Ian McKellen. These actors and their catfights. You know, Rob Ford hasn't been in the Toronto's mayor. Rob Ford hasn't been in the news enough lately. So his brother's doing something about that. Doug Ford says he's sorry if he offended anyone by handing out cash to people living in a Toronto Housing Authority building, promising to switch to gift cards for the Canadian donut chain Tim Hortons in the future. The mayor's brother arrived at the building bearing gifts for children and money for their parents, astounding fellow members of the city council who characterized it as vote buying. Words fail, said another councilman on Twitter. What have we become? This is how rich people buy votes, said another councilman on his Twitter account. They're all on Twitter. Residents, though, were clearly elated. Ford later defended giving out the money, saying it was no different to handing out gift cards to businesses like Tim Hortons. But late Thursday afternoon, Ford told CBC that he understood why some people might have been offended to see him handing out cash. He said he would have handed out the coffee chain gift cards, but only had about $200 in cash on him at the time of the holiday. He estimates he handed out all $200. If I offended anyone, if apology, alert, I apologize. I'm just trying to do some good for people, said the brother of the formerly coke-using mayor. The South African government has formally apologized for any offense caused by that sign language interpreter. We sincerely apologize to the deaf community and to all South Africans for any offense that may have been suffered, said the Arts and Culture Minister. The country's junior minister for disabilities admitted the government had made a mistake, but defended the interpreter, who, I don't know if you saw it, in an interview said he suffered from schizophrenia and had an episode while he was interpreting remarks at the memorial service for Mandela. He had visions of angels, he said. Well, that's not schizophrenia. That's a blessing. Uh-oh. The apologies of the week. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And another one of the major events of the year, at least in his mind, was the filming of a documentary about the life, well, about the world, seen through the eyes of Dick Cheney. And Dick Cheney saw the filming of the documentary also through his eyes.
Next, intimate tales of America's former underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who was just an enhanced heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney, confidential. Confidential. Confidential.
Whoever said the heart is a lonely hunter never had a pacemaker. Pacey and I have been hunting for vindication since we first opened a can of enhanced whoop-ass for Saddam Hussein during the early days of what the more naive among us referred to as the Bush presidency. But somehow the single-minded focus on so-called weapons of mass destruction had distracted a lot of so-called serious people from a simple fact. After all was said and done, Saddam Hussein was never again going to be in a position to try to assassinate George Herbert Walker Bush. Now, as the 10th anniversary of the war was approaching, I was being given the opportunity to, you might say, vindicate myself, one of the few forms of self-pleasuring my pacemaker would allow me. A paid television network had asked to film me for a documentary about me. I may not know everything in the world about leverage, but given my presumed central position in that particular scenario, it looked as though I had the whip hand. Fortified by some of Lynn's fine, low-fat breakfast gruel, I headed for my secure, undisclosed office with one mission in mind. Operation Get My Way. Tuesday, 10:17 a.m.
So, we did scout out this office, mm-hmm. but in the end, we feel we'd have more control over sound and lighting if we built an office set sort of loosely based on this space.
Sound and lighting. I guess as a director, that's the sort of thing you tend to focus on.
Well, without those two factors under control, you might say I'd be peeing up a rope without a rope.
Cute. Here's something else that's cute.
Well, that was my good stopwatch.
Well, it stopped all right. Now listen here, pal. While you were spending the last 10 years directing cat food commercials, I was helping to direct the foreign and military policy of the most powerful nation on the planet. You make some enemies that way. Putting myself in your little studio is a fine way of making me more vulnerable than a starlet in a Turkish bath.
I also did all the really cool Cialis spots, but okay, I understand. We'll make this place work. Obviously, we'll need to bring in some more lights.
Normally, light's not my friend, but...
Shooting with just what you've got in here right now might give us a look that's, a little grim.
So far, I'm liking it. In any case, you'll favor my good side, I'm sure. The one where my mouth doesn't curl into a snarl.
That's in my notes, yes. Right. Now, we'll have the truck parked a block or so away, so we won't call attention to the location, if that's all right with your people.
Maybe you haven't grasped this potent little fact yet. I am my people. And there won't be any truck.
You know what? We'll shoot just 2 cameras, record in the cameras, everything else we can do in post. Fine, no problem. Now, Kelly here is the producer and writer. We'll be asking you the questions.
We'll have the questions finished up by a day before taping, so if you have any problem with any of them, we can hash it out before we shoot.
Mm-hmm. Kelly, good news. We've 86 the hash.
Excuse me?
Here are the questions you'll be asking me. They're in all caps for easy reading.
No, I can see that, but... And certainly we'll take these into consideration in our question formulation process, but obviously for this program to have the credibility and the gravitas that I think we all want it to have, clearly the questions have to be created by someone other than you.
Kelly, huh? You're beautiful when you're hopelessly confused.
Well, thanks, but...
Obviously it's important for all of us to safeguard the journalistic credibility of the Showtime Network. Otherwise people might decide to stop watching Dexter.
We're a completely separate unit from...
Oh, I know. And that's why these questions weren't created by me. They were formulated by a completely separate unit. My wife.
Mr. Vice President, this is obviously an important project for all of us. We probably should try to conduct it in a way that's satisfactory to all of us.
No argument. And since this is a sealed max security space and I'm the only person with the proper chip in my leg to open that door... And since you folks could find yourselves spending the next little while in here with plenty of air and water and lots of Lynn's food, maybe our proposed little set of ground rules are more satisfactory to you than you realize.
I haven't really experienced something like this before.
If you're saying strength is a turn-on, I hear you loud and clear. Oh, and Mr. Director, just a couple more words about my needs.
Sure.
Final cut. It's so satisfying to bring people together. It warms the heart. And it warms Pacey, too. And a partial diary for the second week of March, 2013. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential. Confidential.
And now, ladies and gentlemen.
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The Department of Homeland Security is leading the charge to bolster this country's porous digital defenses. But it's also struggled this year to safeguard its own systems against hackers and spies, according to its top watchdog. A report this week from the department's inspector general reiterated the agency for months failed to patch its systems regularly against known cybersecurity threats or to scan its networks consistently in real time to keep out digital malefactors. Malefactors is what George W. Bush would have called bad guys. Some at DHS even have been using an old, soon-to-be-unsupported version of Microsoft Windows, according to the IG. DHS also lagged in developing a more secure system to ensure the right employees are accessing the right data, the watchdog found. So, Ed Snowden, if you get back to this country, I think there's a job waiting for you at DHS, because it's porous. I know, I'm singing to the porous girls. The Department of Justice's Inspector General issued a strongly worded report this week finding the crisis in America's prison system poses a critical threat, their quote, to the DOJ's ability to function. That might not be a bad idea. The Bureau of Prisons took up about 20% of the Justice Department's budget in 2001. It now eats up a full quarter of the budget, the report pointed out. The president's latest budget shows the total cost of correctional activities will continue to go up until 2018, according to the Inspector General's report. This is a tribute to the let's put them all in jail fad that was going on for so long, I guess. The Inspector General said the costs of the federal prison system continue to escalate, consuming an ever larger share of the department's budget with no relief in sight. Don't tell Paul Ryan. That might be driving the deficit. This is problematic because the DOJ is using resources on prisons that could be going to enforce the law, protect national security, and defend people's civil rights, the Inspector General said. What decade is he living in? Deadline San Francisco, an aircraft fleet owned by Google's founders and former CEO received improper discounts on jet fuel that saved the three billionaires up to $5.3 million, dating back to the depths of the recession in 2009, according to NASA's Inspector General. Don't be evil, but get some money out of the government. These findings surfaced during a review of a government airfield lease for seven planes and two helicopters controlled by Google's founders, Larry Page and Sergey Brin, and its former CEO, Eric Schmidt, big supporter of the president. The aircraft are managed through a company called H211, set up by the three men, as Google's stock price soared. H211 has been paying about $1 million annually to lease hangar space from NASA at Moffett Airfield near Mountain View, the headquarters of Google. NASA's inspector general concluded the rent for the hangar space represented a fair rate, but the inspector general's report flagged the bargain that Google's jet-setting executives got on the fuel for their flights around the world. The aircraft saved somewhere between $3 and $5 million beginning in 2009 by buying fuel through an arm of the Department of Defense at below-market prices that allowed them to avoid state and local taxes, according to the report. So the Department of Defense pays way above market prices for stuff that's used in, battle or in transport of troops. But for gasoline, below market prices, and passes the savings on to Larry, Sergey, and Eric. The discounts didn't result in any losses for NASA or the Department of Defense, but probably deprived the state of California and local government agencies of tax revenue. The inspector general recommended NASA and H211 discuss possible ways to address a situation that engendered a sense of unfairness and a perception of favoritism. News of the Inspector General, ladies and gentlemen, the copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And speaking of jet aircraft, we learned this year that the United States had been supplying Afghan's President Karzai with cash, just a lot of cash, CIA mainly, just cash to have on, you know, walking around money, as they used to say, just to, you know, just to grease the wheels of friendship. Much as the United States did with the Sunnis involved in the Sunni awakening, which, since the cash flow stopped over in Iraq, has become the Sunni asleepening, I guess. But it points out that among all the discussions of the tools and modalities of United States foreign policy, one of the most potent is cash delivered, often by plane, as we recall in The Year in Rebuke.
The Year in Rebuke.
That's what I just said.
L. Paul Bremer, arriving in Iraq, had a little problem. Tough nut to crack. Had to 86 the army, tell the bureaucrats goodbye. He's running the whole country. How's he gonna get by? An aircraft packed with dollars, bills filling every seat. No need for in-flight movies, not a bite to eat. Move
hula ride in first class. Greenbacks with a free pass. Money on a crazy commute. A jet plane full of loot. Dave Petraeus, smart without a doubt, had a little fire they had to put right out. Soon he's getting violent, 'cause the Shias ran the show. What could Dave do for the Sunnis to convince them not to blow?
And now just a moment for news of the warm, ladies and gentlemen, and some good news of the warm for a change. The dangerous parasite Cystosoma monsoni that causes snail fever in humans could become significantly less common in the future, according to a new international study led by researchers from the University of Copenhagen. Don't call it Copenhagen. The results are surprising because they contradict the general assumption that climate change leads to greater geographical spread of diseases. The explanation is that the parasite's host snails will lose suitable habitat due to climate change, according to Science Daily. Our research shows the expected effects of climate change will lead to a reduction in suitable habitats for 4 out of the 5 species of host snails for the parasite. According to our model, several areas will become too hot for the snails in the future, and new precipitation patterns will affect the freshwater areas where they live, says Anna-Sophie Stongard from the Danish National Research Foundation Center. It's not just a foundation, it's a foundation center. Cystosomiasis is an infectious disease caused by parasitic flatworms of the genus Cystosoma. They infect humans by penetrating the skin when in contact with water. Therefore, the snail's habitats are of great importance. The snails act as intermediate host for the parasite's larvae. Therefore, the snail's habitats are of great importance for the spread of the disease. News, some good news of the warm, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world, through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet 7.490 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin. Available through your smartphone through Stitcher.com. Available as a free podcast from from KCSN.org. I'm getting all confused here with all the W's and K's. And also through SideshowNetwork.com. No, it's available. It's available on the internet streaming at KCSN.org. Available as a podcast from WWNO.org. There you go. Got it now. And it'd be just like me getting all this straight if you agreed to join with me. Then would you already? Thank you very much. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Exile in Hawaii Ducks. Thanks as always to Pam Halstead. And thanks to Adam Ferrick here at KCSN Northridge for help with today's broadcast. The email address for this program and the playlist of the music heard here on available for you always, along with, my God, everything in the store is at $5 right now at harryshearer.com. And I'm yakking away at the Harry Shearer on Twitter, like all the city councilmen in Toronto. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of WWNO New Orleans, Louisiana, flagship station of the Change is Easy Radio Network. So long from L.A.